You know what the scariest thing is? To not know your place in this world. To not know why you're here. It's just an awful feeling.
I got a question for you, as always. Have you ever had one of those days when you had your plans laid out in just the perfect order, with just the right timing?
Yes.
And then all of a sudden, God decides to do this to your plans. Did you hear that?
Yes.
Or maybe you didn't hear that. Maybe about this. Rips up the plans so you don't have anything going the way you plan. You ever had a day like that?
I had that today.
You had that today. Okay. Well, I had that yesterday. Let me tell you what happened to the Robster here. By the way, you're at Career Callings, and even though for the next few minutes we will not be talking about anything directly related to your career, at least for the next few minutes, as I tell you my lovely story from yesterday, I promise you that I will indeed apply it to your pursuit of God's vocational calling in your life. And just to make sure you are in the right place, yes, this is Robbie Romeiser with Career Callings, where our purpose is to help you avoid the financial and emotional pain of a bad career decision by helping you find, prepare for, and pursue the work God created you to do. You can join us today at 864-381-7649. That's 864-381-7649, where we can take both calls and text messages there, or you can reach me by email at Robbie, R-O-B-B-I-E, at careercallings.net, Robbie at careercallings.net. So, I'm hopping in the Yukon to take my daughter and a friend to Knoxville, Tennessee yesterday. They wanted to go to a week of volleyball camp at a college up in Tennessee, Knoxville area. So we leave right after church yesterday. It's about 1 o'clock or so, maybe about quarter to 1 we leave. And we get up there with no problems, about a three-hour drive, drop them off at the location that we were going to, which was the mother and father of a family at our church, grandparents of one of her friends. And so we get up there fine, no problem, visit for a bit, hop back in the car, and I'm about half an hour away from Knoxville when I get off the interstate, pull into a gas station to gas up because I needed some of that, grab a cup of coffee, and get out to the car and crank it up, and things worked fine for about 2 minutes while I'm checking an email and trying to respond to the email on my phone. Suddenly the car just cuts off. And I'm like, that's not good. That's not the way it's supposed to happen. So I try to crank it again, and the car turns over, but it won't fire. And it turns over, and it won't fire. So it's obviously not a battery issue. It's not an alternator issue, which would indicate an inability to crank. And I got on the horn with a mechanic to find out what he thought it was, and he said it was probably the fuel pump. So now I'm faced with a question. Do I walk across the street and spend the night in a hotel in, you know, just outside of Knoxville, Tennessee, and hope that the car will get fixed today? Or do I abandon the vehicle and find a way to get back home? Well, I chose the latter because I'm here right now, all right? If I hadn't chose the latter, I'd still be in a hotel room right now in Knoxville, Tennessee. And thanks to a friend of mine at church who is a good friends with the owner of a car rental chain of car rental stores, he was able to call his friend, and the friend had one of his workers drive 45 minutes from his location near the Knoxville airport to come pick me up, take me all the way back to their location and rent a car. And so I get back home about 12:30 a.m. this morning, and in bed about 1:30 a.m. this morning. So what would have been about a 6-hour trip all the way around turned into basically a 12-hour trip all the way around, because I left at 12:40 and I got home at 12:30. So it was an interesting day. Now, the reason I'm telling you this story is because of the tremendous way that God showed his his presence and all of that. Number one, I broke down in the perfect place at a gas station. And when I actually had broken down, I had already moved the car from the pump area and was in a parking area way out of the way where I was not in anybody's way. That was blessing number one, because it did not happen on the interstate. It did not happen at the gas pump where I would have to have someone help me push it away. I was in a good parking space out of the way. That was number one. Number two, there were two decent hotels nearby, so had I chosen that, that would have been good. Number three, and the most important thing, there were plenty of fantastic restaurants nearby. So food was not scarce. Matter of fact, I partook of some food from a little restaurant called Perkins. I don't know if you've ever eaten at a Perkins family restaurant before. Mm-hmm. Kind of like a Denny's, maybe a cross between a Denny's and an IHOP. So very good. I was a little bit down, so I treated myself to some really fluffy, buttery, starchy, fattening, just pancakes. They were fantastic. Fantastic, I tell you. So I was much more calm after I had the sugar rush. Then that was not only that. At church, my friend was at church last night, or just about to go into church last night, when I called him to see if he could connect me with his car rental guy. And he took it upon himself to go to the pastor and let him know about the situation. So the church prayed for me last night. Everybody prayed for me last night. Word got back to my daughter, who I had not bothered to call. I didn't want to worry her or the folks she was with. So word got back to her from someone at the church who was in the youth group. So she calls me up with her friends and said, "We're praying for you, Daddy. I hope you're okay. You need anything? You know, we're only half an hour away. What's up?" So that was encouraging. And then a friend of mine, interestingly, my daughter's friend, whose grandparents they were staying at, her parents left Knoxville at the same time I did. And it did not even dawn on me to say, "Hey, could you come back and pick me up?" So by the time they found out, they were already back home in Spartanburg. Well, they called me up and said, "Oh, man, just call me if you need to. I'm sorry we weren't there to help you. Call me if you need to stay awake." And so I get a call last night, 11 o'clock. I'm still driving. And my friend calls me up and says, hey, just checking on you, see where you are. You doing okay? You need to talk?" And basically what I'm getting at is this. I had a tremendous outpouring of love, tremendous outpouring of help at a time of need. And it was a great reassurance of the way that God's people love each other and are there to help each other. And I am still working through this very bad fallacy in my own character where I want to try to take care of everything myself and solve my own problems. Maybe that's a man thing, I don't know, but it's certainly a me thing. And when I have situations like this where I'm not very helpful, but rather helpless, it's very humbling and also very encouraging to see how God's people will swarm around you and help you if you'll just ask for the help and if you'll pray for the help. And God will send his people to help in numerous ways. And there's other details of the story I could bore you with, but I think I've given you enough. Other than this one, I have no doubt in my mind, if one option I did not pursue, although I considered it, was to call the grandparents of my daughter's friend and say, "Hey, can you come pick me up and put me up for the night?" I have no doubt whatsoever that they would have done that, because they're just that kind of folks, that kind of Christian folks. Now, how does that apply to God's vocational calling? Well, you know what? When we are at a crossroads with our vocational calling, when we feel like we're empty where we are in our vocation and God is trying to point us in a different direction, that's a place of trial. That's a place of kind of like where I was yesterday, of some, one could argue, abandonment, so to speak, in terms of the car breaking down, your career has broken down. And I think what a lot of people in modern American society forget, Christians too forget, is that God has given us people to help. And a lot of times we try to fix our vocational calling problems on our own without accessing the help that God has given us, both through his own word and also the people that he wants us to be affiliated with and associate with in the local church. And unfortunately, we have a huge trend in our country. And I did not bother to pull the statistics on it, but I know it's a huge number of Christians, self-proclaimed Christians, people who claim to have trusted Jesus Christ as their Savior, who have chosen not to connect themselves to a local church. And they have therefore not taken advantage of the love and support that a local church can give someone. And that's not only something that hurts people on a personal level, it's also something they need to consider might be outside the will of God. Just reading here from the book of Hebrews, and let's just make sure I get the right chapter here. Yeah, book of Hebrews chapter 10, verses 24 and 25. The author of Hebrews, who I believe personally to be the Apostle Paul, that's never been proven one way or another, but the writing of Hebrews is so similar to his other letters. It says here in verses 24 and 25, "And let us consider one another to provoke unto love and to good works." And here you go, "not forsaking the assembling of ourselves together, as the manner of some is, but exhorting one another, and so much the more as ye see the day approaching." In those two verses, God, through the author of Hebrews, is telling us, look, I've established the local church as the way corporately you are to worship me. And in that venue, God's people will share their love, provoke unto love, and share with each other their good works and benefit to each other. And that's also in verse 24. All of my options yesterday, whether they be to spend the night with the grandparents or to get help with car rental or to even have someone pick me up from wherever, all of those were tied to my membership in my local church and the people who I love and serve with at my local church. And all those options and all that help came from that. I can only imagine what would have happened yesterday had I not had that body of believers that I was tied to. So what am I doing with this message? I'm trying to encourage you that if you're listening to the program right now and you are struggling with anything in your life, but particularly since this show is about vocational calling, God's calling in your life, if you're struggling with what the next step is, where to go and how to do it, you need to understand that one of the resources God gives us is the people we know and love in the local church. That's where you get godly counsel. That's where you get loving help. That's where you get guidance and direction. And if you are not partaking of that, I want to challenge you to get outside of the American cultural idea that we need to do everything on our own, and understand that God created us to be relational. God created us to invest ourselves in other people. And God created us to be invested in by other people. It's all about relationships. And finding and pursuing God's calling in your life is all about relationships. Not only do you invest in other people through what you do at work, that's all about serving other people. But you give other people the opportunity to help you and see how God's love can make a difference in your life. Come back and join us after the break with more Career Callings with Robbie Romeiser.
And we find the ones that we want to keep, the decent people that want to join our country, and they pay an extra tax, or a restitution.
So if a guy's been making $20,000 a year for 10 years, he owes $200,000, who does he pay that back to?
The federal and state, wherever he lives. You know,
how about to the people he stole it from, the guys who wanted to have that job instead of him? Back in a moment. You've got the Lars Larson Show.
Weeknights at 6 on Christian Talk 660 at 92.9.
Only 27% of college grads are working in the career field for which they studied. The average cost of college is a little bit more than $18,000 a year. This means that 73% of college grads waste $75,000 and years of their lives pursuing fields of study they will never use in real life. Career mismatches cause people financial and emotional pain as they struggle to pay their bills and also to find meaning in their lives. The late Larry Burkett recognized this, and for nearly 30 years, Crown Ministries, through its Career Direct Assessment, has helped hundreds of thousands of people around the world find, prepare for, and pursue the purpose-filled work God has called them to do. To learn more about how you or someone you love can use biblical wisdom to avoid the financial and emotional pain of a bad career decision, visit careercallings.net/discover and let us help you find, prepare for, and pursue the work God has called you to do. Again, that's careercallings.net/discover, careercallings.net/discover.
Westgate Christian School is known for offering an excellent and affordable Christ-centered education. From K-3 through 12th grade, we engage our students in the classroom and we challenge them on the playing field with competitive sports like soccer, volleyball, basketball, and golf. At Westgate Christian, we know there's a time to learn and a time to play. Call 576-4953 and come take a tour. Meet our staff online at wbcs.org. Call 576-4953 today for more information.
It really speaks to my life.
Kristen Talk 660.
But our lives aren't just measured in years. They're measured in the lives of people we touch around us.
This feels like my calling and my purpose in life. There's something different about this journey that's more heart connected.
Purpose is more than just your core of your own self. It's beyond your own identity. Everybody ultimately wants to serve other people.
You can have everything in life you want. You'll just help enough other people get what they want.
And that little bit of sadness in the mornings you spoke of. Perhaps you're not doing what you're supposed to be doing.
Are you having fun yet? I know I am, man. I'm just happy to be here. I am just happy to be here, Maestro. How about you? Are you happy today?
I am. I'm glad you're here, too.
I tell you what, because you'd have to be doing this show if I hadn't gotten that rental car last night.
That would be fun.
That would be very... you could handle it. You are quite the glib young man, if I must say so. May say so. This is Robbie Romeiser with Career Callings. Welcome back from the break. And if you can join us today, we'd love to have you do so at... Robbie@careercallings.net. That's my email address there, robbie@careercallings.net. Or you can join me by phone or text message at 864-381-7649, 864-381-7649. Well, it's time for some practical advice when it comes to your resume. So if you're preparing a resume to maybe look for that next job that God has for you in your life, at some point, you're going to have to take this job and shove it.
Take this job and shove it. I ain't working here no more. A woman done left and took all the reason I was working for.
Now, don't take this job and shove it until you're sure God has you going to the next location. Unless, of course, he tells you to jump ship. You never know. God's timing is not always our timing. But as you prepare to take this job and shove it, of course, one of the things you'll have to do in most cases, maybe not every case, but in most cases, is to prepare a resume. Now, a couple things I want to share with you. Number one, I want to share with you something that you should not do with your resume, and then I would like to share with you some things that you should do with your resume. First thing I want to point out to you is something mentioned by a lady named Liz Ryan, who writes a lot for Forbes.com. She wrote an article not long ago called, "Should I Dumb Down My Resume to Get More Interviews?" And of course, the short answer is, don't do that. That's not a good idea. Well, the reason she said that, or the reason she had to tell people that, is she got an article, or excuse me, a letter from a lady who has a master's degree in anthropology. And this lady was writing Liz and basically said, "Hey, look, I'm job hunting right now, and I'm having trouble getting my next job. And the person I'm dealing with, the coach that I'm dealing with who's trying to help me find a job, has told me that my master's degree in anthropology is hurting me and that I should take it off of my resume because it makes me look overqualified for the types of jobs that I'm applying to." And Liz's response was very, very, very good. Number one, your master's degree, just quoting here from the article now, your master's degree is not the problem. You're looking at your job search through the wrong end of the telescope. Anybody who needs you to pretend to be less smart and capable than you are is not someone you can afford to work with or work for. And it's also not just a matter of principle, she continues, Liz Ryan continues. It's not just a matter of principle. As a practical matter, when you hide your flame in order to get hired, your mojo will leave you. And I love that term, your mojo. We've heard that, your mojo. I've heard one person call it your juju, your passion. Returning back to Liz Ryan, your mojo is the fuel source for your career and your life, and you cannot afford to squander it. And that is so true. Never, ever, ever dumb yourself down on a resume. If you feel like you need to do that to get the attention of people that you're interviewing with because you may appear to be overqualified, then that is, you're basically applying for jobs that you got no business applying for in the first place. You got that master's degree. This lady got that master's degree for a reason. She had a passion for something. She wanted to learn about that thing. And so she needs to be looking for opportunities in the workforce that give her the ability to take advantage of that passion and that education. So that's certainly something you should not do. Now, here's what should you do with your resume? Well, in Business Insider, a few months ago, back in April, The author of a particular article, her name was Lisa Eddy. I'm going to call her Lisa E. That's just, it's a great name. I just can't pronounce it because apparently I don't have a master's degree in names. So Lisa E. writes about this lady named Nina, who grew up in the Middle East but moved to San Francisco well over a year ago because she had one goal. I want to work for Airbnb, which is a website company that specializes in kind of like Uber, where you can have on-demand rides, like a taxi service, so to speak. But Airbnb is all about connecting people who have rooms to rent with people who need rooms to rent. And they have a worldwide stretch. And apparently this Nina lady, when she lived in the Middle East, she had some high-profile marketing jobs and had to travel a good bit. And at first, she would rent rooms from Airbnb, and then eventually she began to host people at her place as well. So she fell in love with the company, moved to San Francisco specifically to interview with them. But for over a year, no matter what she tried, she could not get an interview with them. So one day, one of her family members told her, you know, you just need to give up, move on with life. You've tried everything and nothing's worked. And then Nina sat down and said, you know, I haven't tried everything. There's one other thing I can try. And back in around February, April this year, she created an online resume that not only got the attention of Airbnb and their corporate executives immediately, but it got the attention of people at LinkedIn and several other web-based companies. Uber, I said Uber already. Uber interviewed her, LinkedIn interviewed her. I believe a company called Upstart, where she actually ended up going to work for, interviewed her, and her resume has been viewed over 500,000 times. She's been highlighted in two or three different articles, maybe even more than that, worldwide, for what this resume did to get the attention of the people that she wanted to have get the attention of. So what I wanted to share with you, by the way, she did not get to work at Airbnb, even though she got the interview finally. They just did not feel like it was the right fit for them. And that's why she ended up somewhere else. But what she did on her resume is she did not spend much of any time talking about her work history and experience. You can find it, but it's very, very minimal. Very, very minimal. What she spent most of her time on in her online resume is analyzing Airbnb's industry, analyzing or suggesting where Airbnb is missing an opportunity, showing Airbnb how to take advantage of that opportunity. And she answered questions like, you know, what's missing at Airbnb, where they should go, why I think I'm right. And she gave all kind of statistics. She gave them an action plan, where you should start to start tapping into this market or that market, particularly in the Middle East. She was saying that Airbnb was missing the point in the Middle East, and this is how they could tackle it and grow their business there. And as always, I will link to the things I'm referring to at careercallings.net/radio so that you can see exactly what she did. And she's got a white paper on her website giving marketing tips and why this resume works so well. So you could study Nina's resume and get fantastic ideas on how to structure your own. And why this is so important is this. Time and time and time again, I've said on the show, and time and time and time again, I'll say on the show again, that when you're interviewing with people, with prospective employers, when you're an entrepreneur trying to harvest clients, the one question you have to answer is this: how can you benefit them? How can you benefit them? How can you bring value to the table? And if you can show someone, an employer or a group of potential clients, how you can benefit them and bring them value, you stand head and shoulders above the rest of anybody competing for that work. And that's exactly what she did with this resume, by focusing on solving the problem of the company she wanted to work for. And that's how she got attention. And that's how you can get attention as well. All right, let's wrap it up with Johnny Paycheck.
Take this job and shove it.
Would God be proud of you, Maestro, if you could earn the respect of a demon?
Of a demon?
Yes.
If I had the demon on the run, yes.
Okay, if you had the demon on the run, then yes. Would God be proud of you if you could earn the respect of the demon? I think the answer is yes. I think Maestro gets a solid gold Cupid doll for answering that correctly. In Acts 19, Paul was engaged in his ministry at Ephesus, and he was desirous of he was casting out demons, and some guys, some, the seven sons of a Jewish chief priest named Sceva, tried to do the same thing. And that demon basically said, "Hey, I know Jesus, and I know Paul, but who are you?" And then that, that demon proceeded to whoop up on those boys. Could the same be said of you? Could the same be said of you in the workplace? Are you such a beacon of light for Christ that whether your workplace is anti-Christian or pro-Christian, that people will see you as a beacon of light for them? And you need to really consider how you represent the cause of Christ there. Because if you are not earning the respect of your enemy, then perhaps you're not living the Christian life the way that God would have you live it. See, Paul stood for this. Paul stood for Christ in such a manner that his enemies were threatened by him. Not so much in a way physically, but they knew that Paul stood for Christ and had the power of Christ behind him. And as a result of that, they stood in awe of his reputation. This particular demon that mentioned to the sons of Sceva that Paul I know and Jesus I know, but who are you, had never actually met Paul personally, but they knew of his reputation. And the point is this: respect is not given to you by others. You have to earn it. You have to earn that respect. And in the workplace, you can earn that respect by acting like Christ no matter what's going on around you. I mean, if you are walking with the Lord, if you are deep in the Word of God, studying His Word, praying to Him on a regular basis, you will evidence the fruit of the Spirit, and it will come out in you, peace and harmony, no matter what your circumstances are. And people will see a joy on your face, just like they saw on Paul's face when he was in prison singing hymns and spiritual songs. And I can just give you a quick example from yesterday. I mean, no one really noticed it around me, but when my car broke down in Knoxville yesterday, I had been listening to some sermons. So at that point in time, I was pretty much walking with the Lord. There have been times when things like that have happened where I haven't been walking with the Lord, and I did not evidence a good spirit. But yesterday, I was calm. Are you calm in the workplace when things don't go well? If not, get closer to the Lord in your Bible reading, in your prayer. Walk with Him, and then if something goes wrong, if your boss makes you mad or you have an enemy at work, just show them the love of God. And then when the opportunity arises for you to be able to witness to them, when they come to you with a problem, they'll do so because you've earned their respect by being like Christ. CareerCallings.net/radio for a free podcast of today's show. God bless.